It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mont Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Welcome back, listeners. It's time for another episode of Alaska Tracks. My name is Randy Zarnke, and I'm your host. Over the past 30 years, I've recorded interviews with more than 200 outdoorsmen and women. For this program, we listen to excerpts of the best of those interviews. Most of the people I interviewed for this series were men. However, there were a few women, and they were all quite memorable. Today's guest is June Moore. June and her husband owned the Mantasta Lodge on the Tok Cutoff. June was a registered guide and had a ton of experience. She tells stories that rival any person in this oral history series. Time for me to stop talking and turn it over to June.
Well, I was born on a farm in Iowa. I stayed there and worked it during the Depression because my father was an auctioneer and he traveled and fried sales and I had to practically run the place. So I grew up knowing what hard work was.
Did you hunt and fish and trap as a child?
My dad trapped. I was pretty young then. I used to toddle along behind him and have trouble getting through the fences. He had 17 hound dogs. The time they got through, I was the last one under it. He said, if you can't keep up, stay home.
So with the hound dogs, were you after raccoons?
Oh, coyote and wolf in those days. That's way back. My father was a great hunter and fisherman. He got killed during the Second World War.
And he was the one that kind of motivated you?
Oh, yeah.
Did you come up to Alaska as a young woman?
Well, I moved to Seattle and I worked in a dental office for quite a while. I met my husband. He was in the service. He came home one day and he said, you'll have to pack your clothes. I've been transferred to Alaska. They'll send you up on a plane later on. So where in the hell is Alaska? Never heard of it.
What year would this have been?
Oh, golly. Back in the 40s. So anyway, I went down and bought a new suit and a hat and open-toed high-heeled shoes. It was 40 below in Alaska. I didn't know it. So I had my Tomcat under my arm and I went down to get on the airplane. The purser said, you can't take that cat on board. I said, well, I'm not going then. I said, I'll turn my back, sneak on board, put him in your lap and cover him up, which I did. He behaved real well till, you know, they would gear down the land, jumped out of my lap and run up in the pilot's cabin. So stewardess come out, chatting by the neck. She said, you can't have him on board. I said, well, throw the damn thing out then. She said, well, cover him up.
So where did you arrive in Alaska?
Fairbanks. And then they add salt to an open wound. You know, in those days, the house of ill repute was behind the bank, and across it was private apartments. I'd be damned if he didn't get an apartment for me. They were right across from the whorehouse.
Was there anybody in particular that kind of got you started up here on your hunting experiences?
No, I just wanted it.
Do it on your own, huh?
I got my license in Fairbanks before I ever moved down here.
Now, how about obtaining your guiding license? You must have been one of the first women guides.
There was two others before me, but their husbands were guides. So, hell, they had it made. Me, I worked for mine, boy, I'll tell you.
What was the procedure? How did you go about getting your license?
Oh, boy, you have to go before a board. I think there's 9 or 10 on it. They throw questions at you for an hour. Then you have to take a written test. These guides all knew me. I sat down and waited for the results of the test. This one guy said, you flunked your test. And I said, oh boy. Then he said, no, you didn't. He said, you passed with flying colors. I felt like getting up and pacing him on. But it was a tough test, though. It wasn't easy. You had to know guns, ammo, all wildlife, their mating season.
Probably the hunting regulations.
Oh, yeah. You had to know all of those verbatim. They didn't miss a thing.
What year was that?
Oh, gosh. I don't even remember. It's been so long. I took that test, won 180 men, and I was the only woman. Not one of those suckers would buy me lunch. Do you live in Fairbanks?
Yes.
I had 5 acres on Farmer's Loop. I had a hell of a piece of property, boy. I hated to sell it, but I sold it to buy Mentassa Lodge. Yeah, I made a lot of money in the lodge while I was there. We had an airstrip, too. We had heavy Indian trades. We were only 9 miles from Mentassa Village. They live right on the Mentassa Lake over there. Boy, that's beautiful. You get in a boat and you look down and see those old females laying their eggs. The males come along, fertilize them. Then the bears, you know, they run the whole lake getting the fish that die. And a lot of grizzlies in that country. Katie John lives there. We're good friends. She's a great lady. She's almost 100. We had a 50th wedding anniversary party for Katie John and her husband. And I put up chow to feed and free punch. They finally got rid of all of them except Johnny Sanford. So we put him to sleep in the bed in the motel, 4 o'clock. Well, this is the 8th of June. So everybody went home, and it snowed 4 inches that night. And here come little numbnuts up from the motel, and he's still drunk. And he sat down, and he ordered a beer, and looked right out the window. He rolled across the road and all that snow, you know. He looked around, he said, Jesus Christ, have I been here this long? I said, oh, yes, you've got an awful board bill. He was a real good egg, though. He'd do anything for you. Those village people, they were real good to us. We were good to them, too, though. My husband used to take a dozer and go over and fix a skating rink for the kids. The village all like it. They all say they wish we were back again. Not me, boy. I got tired of that. That running a lodge is a tiresome thing. Work, work, work.
So hunting season was your big relief from the lodge?
Oh, boy. You can say that again. When I sold it, I was really happy. We got a divorce. And I got the lodge and everything. He didn't get anything, but I bought him an $8,000 boat. Run it all the way to Seattle and back. Good man on the water. We remained friends. In fact, I took care of him right here in Sutton the last 3 years of his life. He just passed away last year. I was holding his hand when he died.
And was he an avid hunter as well?
Oh, yeah. He's an old North Carolina hillbilly. Yeah, he was a good hunter. He was a real good guy. We remained friends, even though we separated. We had a lot of game. We had foxes come around through the yard, get on the runway. Kids, they always come and play outside where their folks are drinking. And one Sunday, this little kid ran and said, there's a bear out there. So I grabbed my rifle and I went out, and sure enough, there was a black bear circling the building. And I thought, I gotta watch him. He got too close, so I nailed him. I was afraid he'd catch one of them kids. So I called Fish and Game to come down, and I never touched him after I shot him. Fish and Game, smart ass, he said, well, you've got to dress that bear out. I said, no, I don't. I said, I shot him, and for safety, I don't have to do nothing. It's your bear. You come down here, you pick him up and take him. I'm not going to touch him. It's a job. Any time you go around the ears and the eyes and the nose and the mouth you can save it for taxidermy. Ma'am, you have to dress that bear out. I said, I don't have to do anything but tell you I'm not going to do it. That's what you're getting paid for. So they loaded the bear up and took it with her.
Let's talk about your hunting experiences. How did you get started doing that?
I got a place yet back in the Mentassa Mountains, and I hunted out of there. From Mentassa Lodge, it's a mile down to where you turn off and go back to my hunting camp. It's a beautiful trip in there by horseback. The scenery is fantastic. It's pretty spoiled, I understand now. There's been so many hunters going back in there. The bad part about it, You know, I used to ride the horseback and look around for a game. And now these guys would go out there and they'd kill an animal and leave the gut pile and never say anything. You ride right up on it, and hell, you have to be jumped by a grizzly. We've got a big Quonset hut, and it's got an electric stove in there, bunk beds, and everything. It's real cozy. You're going to take hunters out, you got to have a little bit of something to pacify them. When you're out in the cold all day, you want to be warm and comfortable. We have the Quonset here, and then the creek runs right alongside of it. This is foot deep. When my husband passed away, well, he wanted to be cremated, and his ashes spread over our hunting camp, so I did it. I put him across the creek, and an earthquake came, and it really shook everything up, and I figured he threw him right back across the creek on my side again.
What did you hunt?
A moose and caribou in the Mentasta Mountains.
Do you remember any of the moose hunts that you were on there?
Well, I had two hunters that had been out all day hunting and no luck. We had an outhouse on the side of the hill by the cabin. They're in there drinking, and the end of the day, you know, they're not going out again. So I stepped out, and it's just almost dark. I never walk out of that cabin. I didn't have my gun in my hand. And I looked up at the toilet, and I see this old antler turn, and just one palm. I never said anything to them, and I watched him, and he finally stuck his whole head out there, and I nailed him, and he rolled all the way down the hill right next to the cabin. I said, okay, get out and get busy. I did your dirty work now. I made them clean him.
How about caribou? Do you remember any particular caribou hunts?
I never went out specifically for caribou. They come through the camp back there in the valley, and once in a while I basted one because they were handy. You need winter meat, but I never cared for hunting caribou. I like to hunt my horseback. You can ride up on animals, you know, a moose will stand there and look at you. The only thing ever happened to me that really shook my cage, I was riding my Appaloosa. It was cold, and ice was coming down the creeks. So I started to cross this little creek, icy. The damned horse slipped and fell in that creek right on top of me. I was sopping wet, cold, but I was only a mile from camp. Didn't take me long to get back there.
And hopefully there was a good fire going.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
By now, I hope you've figured out that June Moore is the real deal. She has spent more time in the backcountry and done more hunting than most men can ever dream of. It's time now for us to take a commercial break. Many thanks to our sponsors. Without their support, we wouldn't be here. Now let's get back to our interview with June Moore of Mentasta.
How many horses did you keep?
At one time, I had 17 head. I kept them up at Mentasta Lodge. Strange thing happened there, you might interest you. I was tending bar one Sunday. I had an old pack horse out in the barn, and that's maybe 500 yards from the bar. That damn bear got in there and killed that animal right while we're all sitting at the bar. So I went out and looked, and sure enough, he drug it out of the corral and up a trail. So I got a friend of mine, I said, will you tend bar? I'm going to go get that bear. He'll be back for another one. So anyway, this friend of mine said, can I go with you? I said, yeah, but you got to keep your mouth shut. You can't say a word. Okay. So we went up the trail, and I knew what I was going to find. And here's that horse laying there, and that bear's on it. He's raking it from the head all the way back to the hind end. Just old Herb's eyes got about that big, and he whispered in my ear, I never shot a bear before. I said, I haven't either. I knew damn well that he wouldn't hit him with a baseball bat. So I waited, and I said, aim for his head. So same time he shot, I did. We got him. He dropped everything, even his gun, and ran all the way back to the bar. And he hollered to everybody, I got a bear, I got a bear.
When in reality, you got it.
I never said anything. It don't pay to hurt somebody, you know. He was happy. So anyway, they went up in the pickup and loaded him in the pickup and brought it down. They parked in front of the garage. And my big old Tomcat, he's nosy. So he jumped up over the pickup and he landed right on top of that bear. Every hair stood out like this. Man, he looked like a Halloween cat. When he jumped again, he went about 14 feet straight up and 15 this way on a dead run. I didn't see him for 3 days.
What do you think is the most effective way to hunt grizzly bears?
Wisely. I use a 300 H&H Magnum, so that'll knock anything down. I don't push a bear. That's what torques them off. Kind of sit down and wait. I sat under a tree and raining like hell halfway back to camp, and just sitting there waiting for a bear, and I got him in the rain, and boy, what a mess that is. Clean mud.
Did you have any close calls?
Yes. I have a metal trailer halfway back in the Mentassamount. My ex-husband was along. We had a friend from Fairbanks, him and his wife. Grizzly been in the trailer while we were gone and tore the hell out of it. Took all the cupboards off the walls. My friend, he had a fifth of booze, and the bear crapped all over his booze. And he come out and it's dripping. He said, that SOB's got to go. Had a bed right by the door, and over the end of the trailer's another bed. And they broke the window out right over the end of their bed. So we just hung a little curtain over. So his wife's in the corner room, she's a scaredy cat. Well, that bear pulled the curtain aside and he's looking in that window, and she's sitting on a pillow behind him. He took a shot at him with a pistol. We went down by the lake because we saw his tracks. When a bear's wounded, they'll go down by water and plack mud in it until it heals. So I had to go to the bathroom, so I went around the end of the trailer and dropped my drawers, and freaking, whoa, goddamn grizzly was right on my butt. I banged on the door and yanked it over, and Avery's laying there. I said, right on my tail. He said, oh, really? You know, couldn't care less. Oh, a lot of things to laugh about. This guy wanted a grizzly real bad. He wanted two because he wanted to give his buddy one. So I took him down by the lake back of my hunting camp. There was two grizzlies laying side by side, three-year-old. And I learned a long time ago that when you get a greenhorn out, he freezes up. So when he shoots, I shoot. They never know the difference. So anyway, these two bears are laying side by side. Beautiful, they were light colored. So he got ready to shoot. I shot same time. And they're laying side by side, and the bullet went through both of them and killed them both. He thought, boy, it was a hell of a shot. Told him what a magnificent thing he's done. I got along good with all my hunters. Yeah.
How about doll sheep? Did you ever hunt for sheep?
I run over those hills more than sheep did. That's the toughest animal to hunt, sheep and goats. You learn when you climb that shale, which it starts sliding and go over a cliff. No way you can get out of it. You get to the top of it and you want to get away from it, you run across it, you don't walk. I never fooled around with that shale very much. It's dangerous.
Do you remember your first sheep and the first one you got?
Yeah. I was all by myself, and I walked up a canyon, and I got him, and I thought, how the hell am I going to get him out of here? I managed. He wasn't a big one, thank heaven. I was a pretty tough outdoor girl.
Do you remember the largest sheep you ever shot yourself?
I never really got a record and nothing to be proud of. I just took what you could get back there. You got to really work hard to get a record. That was more after meat than I was trophies.
Now, there were a lot of sheep back in there off the Nebesna Road, but were there sheep over on the other side?
Yeah, you know, they crossed from the Nebesna Road over to the village and on up to the mountains on beyond there. Just have a regular migrating season. And then I guided in Point Barrow for polar bear.
Do you remember a specific polar bear hunt?
With Bill Ellis, he's a pilot and a guide. We were friends 35 years, and we went hunting together a lot. We flew out over the Arctic Ocean in the Super Cub. They got the big pressure ridges and then came across tracks. We flew over, we saw this bear on the other side of that pressure ridge, and so he flew way down and landed. I got out and I walked back up behind the pressure ridge. That old bear came over the hump. The first shot, I got him right in the rear end. He was running. So next time I nailed him. A nice bear, 10 foot 2 inches. It's a big bear.
What kind of a rifle were you using?
300 H&H Magnum.
You mentioned several times the rifle that you use. That seems awful big for somebody your size. Are you just so accustomed to using that it doesn't hurt?
I've never been gun shy. I know a lot of people flinch when they shoot, but never did. I shoot a pistol right-handed and a rifle left-handed. It's real unorthodox. If I was in the Army, they'd spend days redoing me. But I'm comfortable with it. I carry a pistol, too, on my hip.
Just in case.
Well, you never know. You get knocked down in your close quarters, you can't handle a rifle too well. Boy, I got a handgun now that really throws your fist up in the air. It's a 45. I've never had any problems with an animal getting to me yet, but there's always a first time for everything, you know. Cow defending her calf is the worst thing in the world you can run into. Even on horseback, they'll attack a horse. Boy, they run one of those antlers into a horse, he's at it. So I don't push him too much.
Have you had any interactions with the Department of Fish and Game or the Fish and Wildlife Service or the Park Service?
No, they all know me. And they're very kind, very nice. But I've never broken the game law, never. If you're going to hunt, do it right. I don't believe in poaching. I wouldn't poach a cow, moose, or a bull either if you come to my yard.
Do you remember any times when you had real rough weather?
Well, I've hunted in rain and snow, cold, you name it. You have to do what you have to do, weather be damned. If you wait for the weather to change, you might just sit there all winter.
Do you have any comments about gear that you thought was especially good, like boots? Did you always think that one brand of boots were the best?
I wear mukluks, soft mukluks. You rub your legs and feet raw. They have a good sole on them.
And you'd use those even for sheep and goats?
Yeah, especially when climbing. I'm retired now, but I miss it. But I'm going out by myself for moose.
You still use horses?
Mules. I've got 2 mules. See, you stand a better chance of getting a moose with a four-legged animal. Moose don't run like they do from something else. Yeah, I enjoy hunting, but I'll be hunting for myself from now on.
And where do you go? Just here locally?
Yeah, up behind where I live, then head back up into the mountains. I think I'll get a moose this fall. I'll go up there late in the evening and then early in the morning. I'll probably get a bull back there. All I gotta do is go up there and set for a few hours up behind my cabin up there. They come in there all the time. They'll come through there.
And if you get a moose, you can still butcher it yourself?
Hell yes. I'm capable. Believe me, I am. How old do you think I am?
Oh, 75.
I'm 83. I hope he didn't say 100. You have more diplomacy than that. Don't take me long to gut a moose out. You can take a rope and tie one hind leg up to a tree and spread the leg. It's not all that hard. No, I just start at the tail, take my knife and go right up the belly. Then I take the liver and all that out, save it. And then I get up and I take the heart out, the lungs. You want to drain them of blood as soon as you can. Then I cut the head off. There's nothing in the head that I save. I don't even save the tongue. I wouldn't eat tongue if they gave it to me. Well, you know what they use it for. I can just picture them standing there licking their rear end and then me cooking that. No way. I'm a little fussy.
I often ask people if they can sum up how important the hunting has been to them.
to me, it's been half of my life. Yeah, I've done things most women haven't done. Very few have. God's been good to me. I'm eternally grateful. I really love this country. I'm so glad I came up here. I haven't been outside since I got here. Don't want to go either. Yeah, I've had a good life. Alaska's been good to me.
That brings us to the end of today's episode with June Moore of Mentasta. Tune in again next week when we'll hear from another old-timer on another episode of Alaska Tracks.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.